Speaking today with Richard Schechter, who is a HCC trustee in District 5. Richard, how long have you been a trustee?
I was elected first time in November of 2005 and sworn in January of 2006.
So that was an unexpired term?
No, actually, my predecessor was Herman Litt, and his term expired at the end of 2005, and Herman chose to run for City Council District C. And so I was an open seat, and I ran for
it
and was opposed, and then won election.
Okay, and you know, so has the experience been what you thought it would be when you first ran for this office?
No.
All right, tell me about that.
Well, it's just I ran for the office somehow under the illusion that we would spend more time on educational issues, and I think I just sort of had a misconception about what the board did.
Yeah, the board has been talking about a lot of things that aren't necessarily related to education later. We'll get to some of that. But give me your overview, your assessment of HCC as it stands right now. What's sort of the, you know, the executive level view of the system, the good and the bad?
All right, well, I'm going to give you the executive level view as the system has changed over my 6 years since I've been there. I'm very, very pleased with the progress we've made. When I came on board, the college had 53,000 students, and we've been stuck in the 50,000 range for 6 or 7 years. We now have, last semester we had over 75,000 students. We're on the march toward 80,000, and my guess is by the time my next term ends, since I'm unopposed, we'll be nearing 100,000 students. So we're serving a lot more people than we have been serving in the past. We're serving those people in a more effective and efficient fashion. Simply because of the reduction in state funding, we've had to reevaluate how we deliver our services. And so in the past, we've had class sizes that have been small, and we've been able to accommodate people in small classes. We can no longer afford to do that. So we're much more efficient in our delivery. Our class size is up from probably, average class size is up from probably around 16, 17 to, you know, to 23 students.
So it's still not a lot, but it's more.
It's not a lot, but it's more. So we're able to serve more students with the same number of classes, meaning at the same cost. And so that's good for our efficiency. I think our students are being prepared really well. We are the number one transfer institution to the University of Houston. We're number two to the Texas A&M. We're number two to the University of Texas. We're amongst the top 10 community colleges in the United States in terms of degrees awarded and certificates awarded. We've got 26 exemplary workforce programs. So I think the quality of education that we're providing is top-notch. Our students are able to go on and succeed at the four-year universities. And I assume we'll get to one of the issues that I'm interested in. One of them is really trying to quantify how well our students are doing, because the privacy acts and the privacy of student personal data makes that a bit of a challenge.
Well, Texas, it's interesting you brought that up, because one of the things that I did in sort of preparing for these interviews was to try to get a handle on what HCC's graduation rate was, because, you know, obviously the four-year institutions tend to publish that, and it really was kind of hard to get a handle on that. Now, of course, the community college doesn't just serve people who are going to get a degree. It serves a much wider range. But of those who are there to get an associate's degree, what is the graduation rate, and what should it be?
Well, that's hard for me to give you an answer to, because it's hard to know. We don't really know why everybody comes to HCC. Let me give you three straightforward examples for those who are on the four-year degree path. We have students who cannot get into Texas, Texas A&M, or U of H simply because freshman admissions in those institutions are limited. At UT and A&M, it's top 10%. At U of H, it's narrowing, and they're narrowing admissions at every four-year institution. So we have some number of students whose goal is to come in and get 15 to 30 hours and then transfer out. They're not at HCC for a degree. They're at HCC to pick up enough hours to move on to UT, A&M, U of H. And if you look at those schools, they have far more transfer students than they do incoming freshmen. We have some people who are in classes just to pick up a class here and there. They may be enrolled at TSU. They may be enrolled at U of H. They can't get the class they need at TSU or U of H to suit their schedule, so they'll come to HCC, they'll take the class, and it will plug in to their degree plan at TSU or U of H or any of the other four-year institutions in the area. We have some people who, for financial reasons, family health reasons, economic reasons, are forced to leave a four-year university for a semester or two semesters, but they want to keep progressing on through their college path, and so they'll come to HCC just to keep on the path, even though we're not their degree, the place where they're going to seek a degree from. We have students who come and take summer school courses from us to, so that they can only take 12, have to take 12 hours at UT or A&M or U of H, or they'll come over Christmas holidays when we offer these intense short courses, and they'll take the short course just to make their load lighter and allow them to get through the four-year institutions more quickly. And then we have the traditional student. Traditional when you think about the guy who's going to go to the two-year institution. He's going to start at the beginning, and he's going to get his two-year degree, his AA degree, and then he's going to transfer on. So we don't really know what the goal is of many of our students. And many of our students come, and they're just coming because college is the next step. They don't really have a well-formulated plan. Now, we have adjusted this past few months. We've made some changes in our counseling structure, and that is designed to try to get a better handle on this. I don't want to go into too much detail, but the goal is to diminish the number of counselors, that is, people who are dealing with, you know, crisis intervention, or why have I failed this course three times, or ADA counseling, versus student advisors, people whose job is to get their hands on the students and to help them map out a course plan to get through the system and on to their four-year institution of choice or to their goal of choice. So we're going to decrease the number of counselors and increase the number of advisors, and the advisors are going to be given an array of students to monitor. So these are the students for whom they are responsible. And hopefully that's going to let us get a little better handle on what are the actual students' goals, what is their purpose in attending HCC, and how can we help them achieve their goal?
Well, we've talked about a lot so far about, you know, the good things HCC is doing and, you know, the goals. Where does HCC need to improve?
Well, let me finish on one other good thing that I think we're doing, and that is I think our financial management is excellent. We have... When I came on the board, we were AA rated in terms of our bond rating, and we did not have, in my view, sufficient cash and cash equivalents, which is it's an accounting focus that people are looking at to determine whether you have sufficient reserves so that in event something bad happens to your system, like Hurricane Ike turns up the ship channel and shuts you down for 3 months, can you keep your critical personnel on staff while you rehabilitate your facilities and get back up? And we have had our bond rating increase. We're now AA+. The only way we can get to AAA is with a significant tax increase. Other than that, we're as high as we're going to get. And we just issued, we just had a reissue of $130 million in bonds that we were refinancing because we could take advantage of lower rates and it would reduce our debt service, and that would reduce the line item in the budget that had to go to debt service. That offering was oversubscribed by four times, meaning we could have sold $500 million worth of bonds in the market if we had them to sell. There was that much demand for HCC paper. The county went out the week before, couldn't sell their bonds. They were undersubscribed. So, and they're a AAA. So the college has really good financial management. The board has done some things this year that it needed to do to send a message to the, to I think the community, to our stakeholders, and to the professional bond managers, money market managers, that HCC takes its financial condition seriously and that we are well run and well managed. And I think the fact that we were oversubscribed by four on our bond issue is a reflection of the confidence people who vote with their money, they want to make money,
right,
have in the college's financial management. What can HCC do better? And that really focuses on some, you know, I think that really gets back to the question of why did I run for the board for another term? Because if, you know, if I'd accomplished all my goals, which I really view as goals for HCC, then I wouldn't have run again. I think we can do a number of things better. I think we need to take the next step in a number of areas, and I'm not saying to do them better, but I'm saying these are where our focus needs to be for improvement. Number one, we've got over 75,000 students. We have a number of facilities that simply we just can't take any more students at those facilities. We have places that are offering biology labs and chemistry labs until 11 o'clock at night. The demand is so great. So we've got to expand our facilities. That expansion, in my view, has to occur at the right locations, that is, at the campuses where there is a great demand for classes, not at campuses that are undersubscribed, but we've got to focus on the campuses where the students are voting. This is where I want to go with their feet and make sure that we provide significant the kind of facilities they need to be successful. I'm not confident I have a good handle on exactly how well we're doing educating our students. And I was at a meeting, there was a very small lunch I had with the chief academic officer of the college coordinating board, our college's chief academic officer, Dr. Charles Cook, and our deputy chancellor, Dr. Art Tyler, this past week, where that was one of the things we talked about. What data does the college coordinating board have about how our students are doing? What can be shared with us? How can we do better? Are we doing well enough? If not, what is it that we need to do better so that when our students move on to a four-year institution, they are equal to or better than the students who were there for the first 2 years? I'm not saying we're not there. I'm saying I don't have a good handle on it. I think we need to work on our completion rate. Whatever our completion rate is, our graduation rate, it's not high enough. And that's why one of the reasons we made this counseling change, I think we've really got to look at some other changes as well. What can we do to ensure that we're retaining students from semester to semester and helping them get through to completion? And I personally think the counseling will help. I think a lot, this is just sort of a gut gestalt feeling, is that a lot of students go to a four-year institution or a two-year institution because they're told that's what they should do. And they don't have a real vision in their heads about what exactly it is they hope to accomplish. You see a lot of kids taking 6 years to get through college, 8 years to get through college. And I think some of that's just a reflection of, I don't want to say this in a negative way, but it's a reflection of the immaturity of many 18-year-olds. They're just not, they don't have a vision for where they want to be. But we need to help them in that regard. If you're coming to a four-year institution and you're spending your hard-earned money and you're going to take your hard, you know, your time, we should be trying to help you as best we can to to have a vision for where you want to be. And if you don't want to develop one, that's not our problem. That's your problem. We can't make you develop one. But we need to provide the services to try to do that. I want to see the college... I want to ensure our financial stability. And, you know, this is... when I came on the board, somewhere between 35 and 40% of our funding came from the state, about 37%. The dean of the board, Bruce Austin, who's been on 22 years, when he came on the board, state funding was 75%. This year, state funding for HCC will be a little less than 20%. And it's going to continue to go down. And sort of the joke we tell is that, you know, first we were state funded, 75-80%. Then we were state supported, 35-37%. Now we're state molested, 15%. They give us a modest amount of money, and then they give us all these things we have to do and comply with, these unfunded mandates. And if things continue in this direction, our contact with the state of Texas will be we're state located. And that means that there are two entities that have to pick up the slack. When the state cuts its funding, there are only two other, we have three sources of funding. One are the students, and one are the taxpayers, the property taxpayers.
And, you know, do you see any need to increase the tax rate?
Well, that's a good question, Charles. We actually, we were successful in balancing this year's budget by not increasing taxes. To do that, we had to have administrative freezes. That is, there are administrative positions that chills. There are administrative positions that are simply not being filled, a little over $4 million worth. And until we have the funding for those, they will not be filled. So we're asking our administrators and our administrative staff to work harder. We made changes, although we did not fire any faculty members. We didn't lay anybody off. We did make changes in our faculty chair structure that reduced the numbers of faculty chairs, and they're the folks who are involved in monitoring the quality of instruction. But we felt we could do this, and that saved a bunch of money. And we made some other efficiency changes, hard efficiency changes. And then we've got some entrepreneurial efforts that are ongoing. We're actually trying to have the college make money. For example, probably the most, I don't want to say famous because nothing we do is famous, but the most well-known and probably the most controversial is this agreement we have with Qatar Community College, where the government of Qatar has established a community college in Qatar, and they have hired Houston Community College to run that college. And so we go there, we provide the instructional plan, you know, here's what your students need to learn in these given areas, and we provide faculty, and we make a profit from that. And that profit is going into our general revenue, into our general fund, so that it offsets the need to raise tuition or to raise taxes. So it's an effort to find a different leg of the stool, if you will, to offset our reduction in state funding.
Are you also looking at opportunities to offer courses or programs online?
We have a huge online presence, and in fact, the fastest growing segment of the college are the online courses. So,
I presume those are cheaper to deliver as well.
Not necessarily, because while it requires a faculty member, so you still have to have a faculty member, and it requires a different kind of infrastructure, technological infrastructure. So while somebody may not be in a building, you have to have the technology, and you have to have virtually everything else in place. to deliver that. And now we deliver we deliver fully online courses. We deliver hybrid courses where you may come once a week to the college, and then twice a week you're getting your course content over the internet.
We also do some with video conferencing,
We have some video conferencing, and we have, you know, we have a nursing, or we have a healthcare facility in the medical center, but in an effort to try to let students take their initial courses outline, we'll teach the didactic courses, and so students can be in two or three different places, and there's a lecturer in two or three different campus facilities, but we have a lecturer who's lecturing from Coleman, our healthcare facility, so they don't have to come downtown to take it, they don't have to come to the medical center to take it, and we can have offer more students those initial classes.
Now, HEC also works with the independent school districts that are in its region. Tell them, you know, what opportunities do you see there?
We have, what you are referring to are, there are two different things we do now. There are early colleges where we actually have high schools on our college campuses. Sometimes they're actually embedded within our facility. Sometimes they're a separate structure. And students attend those high schools and they take normal curricula, but the goal is to get them into college courses by their junior year so that they can take courses in their junior and senior year that are called what are called dual credit courses. They count both for high school graduation and for college graduation. And we had this past year, Charles, we had a group of students at our graduation, which occurs on Mother's Day weekend, and they were all their academic regalia was red. They were high school students who were receiving their AA degree before they received their high school diploma, because we graduated Mother's Day weekend approximately, and the ISDs graduated at the end of May. So they'd already completed 2 years of college and had an AA degree before they even had their high school diploma. Then for other on other facilities, we offer what are called dual credit courses. That is, even you're in high school and you want to take a college English course, we will come out and teach that college English course at the high school if there's a significant or sufficient enough number of students. And so that's the two ways we offer courses. Now, Terry Greer had an interesting idea, and we've been working with HISD on it, and it's what's called career academies. And what he wants to do is take five of his high schools and embed in those high schools a career academy program where students would enter those programs in ninth grade, and they would take them through high school, and there would be college level courses taught in there, and they would have extra sessions. Many of these, some of these would be targeted for workforce completion certificates as well as their high school degree.
So like plumbing or electrician or healthcare or whatever?
Exactly. Healthcare, I think airline, the airline industry was one. It didn't quite come to fruition this year because of state underfunding and some monetary issues, and I don't think HISD felt these high schools were ready for this program. But the interesting aspect was the fifth year, the students would attend college on the high school campus. So they'd come back for their fifth year and to get their final HCC degree at their high school. So there was some feeling, he thinks there may be some issue where students feel intimidated by moving from a high school they're familiar with to a larger facility and institution where they're unfamiliar. Maybe they're getting lost, maybe they're not going. So come on back to your high school that you know. We'll do your fifth year there. You'll get your degree there. And so we had worked out a pilot program with him for these five high schools. Eventually got put on hold for this year. But so I think that may be something you see experimented with in the future.
Now, HCC has also expanded its territory recently. You you annexed or reached an agreement or had an
annexed
A-Leaf and North Forest, but Spring Branch chose not to join in. Are there other annexation areas of interest, and is there going to be another attempt at Spring Branch?
We have, the state law divides every region into two areas. You're either in a taxing district or you're in a service district. If you're in the taxing district, you pay taxes, you have the right to vote, and your students have the right to attend at a significantly reduced price. Both A-Leaf and North Forest were in what was called a service area. That is, we had to provide services for those areas, but we charged their students significantly more. They did not have to pay taxes. Both of those areas opted in an annexation election in which they alone got to vote, opted to become part of HCC in return for reduced tuition and obviously improved services. There's investment we can make in their communities that's very hard to make in communities that are only part of our service area. That just leaves two service areas that are not part of our taxing area. One is Spring Branch ISD and one is Katy ISD. And I know of no discussions at this time regarding an effort to go back and annex either of those two areas. I will say this, though. For the first time in a long time, the legislature began talking about this and talking about the idea that as we are reducing the funding from the state for community colleges, maybe we simply need to require everyone to be in a taxing district. And that idea started to get some play this last session. There was no effort made to do it, but people were starting to talk about it. And as you know, with your experience in the legislative process, a change like that is going to take 4 years, 6 years, 8 years if it's going to occur. But it would not surprise me in this decade if the legislature at some point did not face up to the fact that it needs to put these areas in a taxing district. Their students will get reduced tuition. They'll get better services in return. They're going to pay for it. And in return, I expect state contribution will continue to go down.
I guess the good news is it can only go down so much.
That's right. But I'm guessing they will eventually view this as a way to avoid to push down the taxing responsibility to someone other than the state legislature.
Let's talk a little bit about the board itself, because it's been in the news for some less than good reasons recently. The ethics issues, board members, you have a sitting board member that's been censured for not the first time for conflict of interest, or having family members doing business on HCC contracts. Is the problem that HCC, the rules that the HCC board has for itself are insufficient, or is it that the trustee in question is not following them?
Yeah, okay.
And I'll say up front, I know that there's also a lawsuit involved here, and you may be restricted on what you can say.
Yeah, let me just say that the trustee involved has sued for defamation, so I'm just going to give you my broad, general perspective on this. We have incredibly strict rules at HCC regarding contract issues. For example, trustees are not supposed to have, we're bound by all state laws, which include you can't have somebody within first degree of consanguinity working for the college. Okay, I think it's the first degree of consanguinity. So your children shouldn't be working for the college. They shouldn't be working for contractors who are contracting with the college. And you certainly should not be contacting contractors and saying, hire this sub because you want your child who works for the sub to be getting a deal. And I'm not saying anybody's done any of those things. I'm just saying you shouldn't be doing that. They're borderline illegal activities. They're clearly unethical activities. And everybody knows that. Now, we have a blackout period where when we put something out for bid, there is not supposed to be any contact between anybody who's going to bid on that item and a board member from the moment in time it goes out for bid until the final contract is signed. That's beyond the actual board vote on the contract. That's until the administration's negotiated a deal and a final deal's been cut. Now, that doesn't mean you can't talk to somebody, say, hey, how's the weather? How's your family doing? Whatever. It means you don't talk about the contract. And people know all of this. So, you know, a lot of times you can have ethical rules and regulations that are good quality. You can't make people abide by them.
You know, one way you could look at this, since again, the trustee in question is not the first time the board's taken action against her, is the problem that there isn't a stronger remedy than censure? Or is it ultimately up to the voters?
At the end of the day, the state legislature has, in its wisdom, left the final decision to the voters. We live in a democracy, and the voters are free to return or to elect or return public officials to office, and they have to stand for re-election. And, you know, the voters will have another chance to make a decision. The downside with that, with respect to HCC, is our terms of office are 6 years. There's a benefit to a six-year term of office, and there's a detriment. The detriment is it's 6 years between the time you're first called up before the citizenry and the time they get you again. But the benefit is you shouldn't be out campaigning for 6 years. You know, it's not like the United States Senate. You don't need to be raising funds from the day you get there until you raise 6 years from then. And so you would think it would provide, that the six-year term would provide some more space where there's not that need. But, yeah, the voters will have, with respect to the trustee in question, the voters will have her record, and they can consider it in 2 more years and decide if she's who they want to return to the college board or not. And that's her district's call.
I mean, obviously other government entities have impeachment provisions. HCC does not. Do you think that's something that the legislature ought to consider?
I had not really given that a lot of thought, because we don't have it, and nobody's ever really proposed it. I just really hadn't thought about that. I can see pros to it. I can see cons to it. I can, just like the impeachment of President Clinton. What you don't want is a situation where it's politicized. And I will tell you, there are provisions where we could go and attempt to have a judge remove a trustee. There is a judicial removal provision. But the Harris County, you look at the Harris County School Board, which has a lawsuit pending to remove one of its trustees. And they're spending the money on the lawsuit. The suit's gone nowhere. In fact, it's my understanding that the Texas Supreme Court is sitting on a motion to determine whether or not to allow them to even depose this guy. So they're spending thousands of taxpayer dollars. At the end of the day, which will not be in a day, at the end of the years of litigation, there's going to be a decision made. The guy can appeal the decision. Nothing is final if he's removed till he's appealed it through the Supreme Court, and then all that happens is he's removed, he can run for election again. It's not a bar on service, it's just a removal. So even if you have this procedure, all it does is create an early election process. And in our particular case, you know, the length of time it would take for such a removal procedure to run its course would have been beyond the next election.
One other thing, that one of the places where the legislature has intersected with the board is that there has been legislation proposed in the past that's not got anywhere that would require a sitting HCC board, a sitting HCC trustee member, to resign if he or she wanted to run for some other office. Is that legislation you would support or oppose?
Oh, I'm agnostic on that. I know there are some entities that require that resignation and some that don't. And I guess I'm not. I don't think people should have to resign to seek another office. You see that all the time. But if that's what the will of the people is, great. You know, sort of like term limits, I see the pros and cons of term limits.
All right, so you don't have an opponent, so people will return you to office. What would you like to, what would you like to be able to say 6 years from now you've accomplished in your next term of office?
And I think it's primarily the things that I have pointed out. One, I want to ensure the financial stability of the institution, that we have addressed the fact that state funding is going to be reduced by creating additional mechanisms of funding, either through being entrepreneurial, improving our grants department, which is now outstanding, but even beyond where it is, looking for other ways to raise money beyond just the state. I also want us to ensure that we have a fair tax system, but one that's going to support the needs of the institution, and that our relationship between the taxes and the tuition does not get skewed. And by that I mean that we, in an effort to avoid dealing with a tax rate that's appropriate, we put an excessive burden on our students for tuition. So I think there are a number of sub-issues to that. You know, I think we need to look at the issue of differential tuition. That is, we have some, like our Coleman College, our healthcare institution. It may be because of the costs of running that the student should have to pay higher tuition for some of those courses than somebody should have to pay for an English course. I think we need to evaluate the differential tuition issue. I would like to ensure that the institution is on financial stable footing. And we have done that this past, that's one of, I think, the great things that we did this year in response to the funding crisis, is we increased tuition for the first time in 8 years. Now, that was not a good deal. Nobody wanted to increase tuition, but we sat down and we negotiated with the students, and we came up with an amount that they thought was fair. It was right in line with what other people are charging in the community. We talked with the faculty about it. We talked with our financial advisors about it to make sure we were sending the appropriate message. So when that actually came before the board, the student government endorsed it, the faculty senate endorsed it, our financial advisors endorsed it. So, you know, we had full buy-in before the board actually considered it. I'm going to go back to taxes for just a second because we talked about it just very briefly. We're going to have a very slight tax increase this year. Somewhere around 2% is being proposed. I don't know what we'll finally do. It won't finally be adopted till the end of October. So the tax on the average home in Harris County would go up $3. Now, that's a very modest amount. We don't need it for this year, but the second year of the biennium, we have a shortfall, and if we can get some extra money this year, $2.5 to $3 million from this very slight increase, we can use that to help offset the deficit next year and ensure that we'll be able to meet those budgetary needs with some additional budget cuts next year. But I just didn't feel like we would be able to get all the way there unless we saved up some money from this year and used it for next year. So it's very, very modest increase, but I think that's and it boils out to something around our current rate is our effective rate is 9.5 cents per $100 of evaluation. It would go up to 9.7 cents per $100 of evaluation. Just to give people a feel, the HISD is about $1.05 per $100 of evaluation, or 11 times our rate. And the city is around 70 cents per $100 of evaluation, or, you know, about 8 times our rate. We have the 5th lowest tax rate in the state of Texas, the lowest in the Gulf Coast area. San Jac, which is south of us, has a tax rate that's double ours. Lone Star, which is to the north, has a tax rate that's somewhere around 25 or 30% greater than ours. So we need to ensure we're on good financial footing. We need to ensure that we have proper facilities in place. We need to ensure that we are meeting the needs of the employers in our region in the 21st century. That is, that the workforce programs that we offer are the programs that the employers in Houston need. Doesn't do much good to offer a program training somebody to be a horse and buggy maintainer if that's not the job of the 21st century. So we need to be very flexible in ensuring we're meeting the needs of the community, and that means the advantage of community colleges, you should be able to move quickly as the economic needs of the region change and the employment needs of the region change. And I want to make sure we're still monitoring that, and the board's monitoring that on a regular basis. I want to make sure we're monitoring the academic successes of our students, and that we're providing the kind of quality education and affordable tuition that they need so that they can succeed. And you talked about ethics, and I have some concern. You know, it's very unfortunate, but the Chronicle, I think, has sort of gotten it right, is that you got 8 people, you got a 9-person board member, and you got 8 people on the board who pretty much are, you know, acting within the boundaries, and then you got one person who's been censored 3 times. And I just want to make sure that we continue to have good ethical rules and standards, and that our folks are well trained on those, and that people continue to insist that our ethical standards are adhered to by all board members.
All right. So, Richard Schechter, thank you very much for talking to me today.
Okay, thanks, guys.